Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. Inspiring stories that change lives. Where ordinary heroes tell their extraordinary stories of how they have triumphed over unexpected challenges. This is where we say what can't be said and use the AAA formula for freedom. Awareness, acceptance, and action. Now, here's your host, Hillary Burns.
Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. And today I am so excited to have my friend Suzanne Burton on with me. But before we go into Suzanne, I just want to let you all know I've been writing a book, and the book launch, it's called Real Talk. And it's all about the getting real process that I am so excited about. And the launch date is going to be March 14th. So stay tuned for more news about that. It's going to be very, very, very exciting. That's in 2 weeks from today, if you're watching this live. And if you're not, hopefully you didn't miss it. But now I would like to introduce my friend, my very good friend, you know, I said I wasn't going to start crying, but so I, you know, there's a few people in life where you say, she's lovely, you know, she's just lovely. And Suzanne is one of those people. She's just lovely. She has this adorable accent and she's got quite the story to tell. And I can't wait for you to hear it. You know, there's been struggles, but she's overcame them and she's just an amazing person. So welcome, Suzanne, and thanks for being on the show.
Lovely to be here. And by the way, I haven't got an accent. You have.
Well, you know, she's got the story. I think she was, correct me if I'm wrong, you were born in Kenya, and then you ended up in England with some other places. But where, I know you don't have an accent. If you did say it was an accent, where do you think it came from? From Kenya or from being in England?
I think it came from Kenya, because Kenya was a British colony and everybody spoke the Queen's English or the King's English at the time. So yes, well, probably both Kenya and England.
Okay. Is there another language in Kenya or is it all English there?
Oh yes, there are hundreds of native languages, but English is the recognized lingua franca. So people speak, you know, they might speak Swahili or they might speak Kikuyu or they might speak other languages, but English is the one that everybody speaks so they can all understand each other.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
And I forgot. I believe it's the language of government.
Okay. Okay. And I forgot to say that Suzanne is a very accomplished linguist and language teacher as well. That's why she knows all those words that I've just heard for the first time. What did you call it?
Lingua franca.
Yeah. What does that mean?
It's the common language.
Okay. Or like the legal or the.
I hope I got that right. Well, you know, if you have all sorts of different languages in a country, and there's one that unites them all.
Okay. Cool. Very good. All right. So let's go back. You said your parents. Both parents fled Nazi Germany? What is that story?
Yes, well, my parents married in 1936 or even 1935 in Germany. And they had met at university and they got married. My mother was Jewish. And so my father had to report to the police every week. And at one stage, he just thought, you know what? This is getting too dangerous. We need to leave Kenya. We need to leave Germany. And they had a small baby, my brother. And my father applied for jobs outside somewhere in the world. And it just so happened that a very famous German architect was working in Kenya and was looking for people to come out and work with him. And my father applied and got the job. But, you know, Kenya, where's Kenya? And my mother, she said, my goodness, it's on the equator. I'm not going to the equator. Anyway, my father went out and my mother, they were living in Hamburg at the time, and my mother closed up the flat, and then she got it because she was actually originally from Holland.
Oh.
And she packed up the flat and packed up the bags, and then she went by train from Hamburg to Holland, where she was going to get a ship to take her to Kenya. And at the border, she was stopped by the Gestapo, and she was kept for quite a few days. And they didn't want to let her go over because she was Jewish. But it was thanked. Her father was a very famous, eminent scientist. And it was, although he died several years before, it was thanks to his renown and fame that they let her go through. So she went to the coast. She went to get a ship with my brother, and then she sailed out to Mombasa, actually, to be with my father.
Wow. So did she, I mean, you know, I read these books, and even though they're fiction, I mean, especially if you're Jewish, I mean, even if you weren't Jewish, it was so dangerous, you know, say the wrong move and they'd shoot you. But that's a miracle, really, that she got out.
It is, I mean, a miracle.
Did she say she was visiting her parents? I mean, obviously she didn't say, I'm leaving the country to go with my husband.
I don't know what she said. I think she must have said she was going to see her family in Holland.
Yeah.
I don't know what she said. But then once she got to Kenya, at one stage, the British, because Kenya, as I said, was a British colony, and at one stage they rounded up all the Germans, whether they would, because in fact the person, the architect who had hired my father, turned out to be a firm Nazi.
Oh.
So he was arrested.
Oh.
And then to round up all the Germans, whether they were pro-Nazi or anti-Nazi. And they shipped them all off to South Africa. And my father spent 3 years in, wasn't a prisoner of war camp, it was called a holding camp. So he was there for 3 years while my mother was all alone in Kenya with a little baby, actually, my brother. So that was really tough for them.
And you weren't born yet, right?
I was born after the war. He did come, after 3 years, he was released and he came back. Yeah,
so your mother was all alone? I mean, did she have friends? Or?
Well, I mean, she didn't have many because she hadn't been in Kenya long. You know, she just arrived. But she did
so
have
she didn't know
friends.
If he was even going to come back, right?
So she didn't.
Oh,
and
my
she kept
God.
Writing and they... The British government said, they said, no, we can't do anything about it, but we remain your faithful servant. Anyway, yes, yeah, so he did come out in the end, and then.
And did the boss come out too?
I don't know what happened. Good question.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to him.
Wow.
I have no idea. I could look it up, but I, yes.
No, that's okay. I'm just curious.
Yes.
Questions that you can't answer. Okay. Wow. Okay. So then you were born and you started dancing. So that was,
yes,
that was in Kenya.
Was in Nairobi in Kenya. So when I was three, I was at a kindergarten, and every Wednesday I could hear music coming from one of the rooms. So I went up and I used to peep through the door and just stand in absolute amazement watching this ballet class. And I used to go every week, apparently, and just peep through the door. And one day, the teacher, Mrs. Cowie, she waited for my mother and said, look, why don't you let Suzanne join the ballet class, or the dance class? So I did. I started at three. And dancing was a passion, absolute passion of mine. Until I was well into my 40s. I loved it, absolutely passionate.
But what kind of dance? What kind of dance have you done all your
life?
Well,
in Kenya, it was ballet.
Okay.
And then at one stage, the examiners came out from England, from the Royal Academy of Dance. We had exams. And at one stage, they said, you know, if Suzanne wants to carry on, she should go to England because she can't learn any more here. I was going to go to England. I was 11. So I begged my parents to let me go to boarding school, to a theatre school, a ballet school in England. And so when I was 11, my mother and I, we flew to England, and it was in the Easter, and I started at Elmhurst Ballet School.
So you were all by yourself at 11. Did your mother go back home
Of
and
course she
practice?
did, yes. Well, I had family in England. I had an aunt,
Okay.
an aunt and uncle, and my cousin, one family there. I had cousins in Holland, of course. And so during the I used to go to Kenya for the summer holidays, but for winter and East for Christmas and Easter holidays, I used to spend it with different families in England. So in England, I had my aunt and uncle, and I had my godmother. So I used to go to spend bits of holiday with different people.
So, if
After
your mother was from Holland and her father was famous, and your father was from
Yeah.
England, then
No, German.
whose part of the family was in England? Or your
My mother's
mother's?
sister.
Okay. But your
Because
father was like hardcore German? Wow.
he wasn't Jewish, so my mother's sister, she and her husband had also fled Germany and come to England.
Wow. It's so crazy, right?
And her two
Knowing what we
brothers.
know now, that they survived. There's a
Yes,
lot of people that didn't leave. They didn't think. Father was smart.
Well, yeah, I mean, my father had a brother who was 7 years older, and he had five children. And so he couldn't really leave with five children. He worked in the shipyards in near Hamburg, but he had no choice. He couldn't leave with five children. So I think he just kept his mouth shut and just did what he was told.
But he was okay. They weren't Jewish, so it wasn't as
Yeah, no,
dangerous, right?
they weren't Jewish, yeah.
Wow.
But my mother's two brothers, she had two brothers in Holland
Okay.
because they fled to Switzerland.
Oh.
They left on foot, and they had all sorts of adventures getting from Holland to Switzerland. And they were actually my one her older brother was actually captured but released. Anyway, they went to Switzerland and then Canada, and yes, all sorts of
Did they
things.
go like during the war when it was occupied and they had a
Absolutely, yes,
off?
that's yeah, they did, yeah.
Are they still around? They should write that story.
No,
Oh,
they've
no.
died. I mean, yeah,
Wow.
they've died. And
It's one thing to
my aunt.
read about it, right? It's to read about it just like from the front of my home here, but to actually live it, I can't imagine. I can't imagine what
Well,
it was like.
my father, when he was interned in Southern Africa, he came back. He never, ever, ever talked about it at all. Not even to my mother. Never mentioned it. It must have been absolutely horrendous. And her younger brother, his wife, she stayed in Holland because she wasn't Jewish, and she was very active in the resistance in
Oh, wow.
Holland.
Wow. That's so brave,
Yeah.
So whose wife was that? Your
My mother had two brothers, and it was the wife of her youngest brother.
Okay.
And he had fled to Switzerland and
Oh,
then
because he
Germany.
was Jewish and she
Yeah.
wasn't. She
His
wasn't.
wife wasn't Jewish, no.
But she still was in the resistance. That's so amazing, right? Wow. Amazing. Okay. All right. So there you are, 11. You've gotten to England. And how was that? You were just
Well, it,
happy?
I mean, I remember because at the time you didn't have direct flights to England. So we went from Nairobi, and then we went to Khartoum, and then we went to Cairo, and we went to Brindisi, and then we went to England. And of course, in Kenya, which was a segregated country, most of the menial jobs were done by Africans with black skin. And then when I came to England, I couldn't believe it. Taxi drivers were white and people sweeping the roads were white. It was just, you know, I thought, wow, it was a complete shift for me. And people wore overcoats and it was cold. And yes, it was a shift.
So, but I mean, 11 is so young, but you weren't scared, right? You just, it was just an adventure for you. That's amazing, right?
I was just,
you weren't
I wanted to dance. That's what I wanted
wow.
to do.
All right. So how long did you dance for? So you danced through how many years of school? Did you stay in England?
But I stayed there until I was 17. And then unfortunately at the time to be a dancer, a ballet dancer, you had to be very thin and quite tall. And I wasn't thin or tall. And I didn't have the physique. So I left. And I would have loved to go to university, actually. But I was a bit, I had scruples because my parents had done so much. I'm not sure it was a sacrifice, but they'd done so much to enable me to go to ballet school. I thought, I can't tell them now that I don't want to do that anymore and go to university. I would have loved to. But instead, I trained to teach dancing.
Oh.
And actually, one of the things that I did that I absolutely loved, I was part of a group of dancers, and we did reconstructions of court dances from the Middle Ages to the 18th century. And that I loved. What I loved about it was the mixture between dancing and the intellectual research and that side of it.
And that where was that? Was that still in England?
In London, yeah.
Okay. Wow. So was that a paid job?
I think so. It was very, very occasional. You know, it wasn't.
Okay. All right.
But so teaching, when I trained to teach and then went out to teach. But that was such a slog because I didn't have a car. I had to get a bus. I went from the north of London to the south of London to the east of London, all over just by bus. It spent hours and hours traveling in buses to then give little ballet classes. Yeah, not a terribly happy time.
And how long was that? That was at 17. You stayed there.
I stayed, and then my father. Well, my parents left Kenya at independence, which was in 1964, and they came to England. But my father had taken all the British qualifications because originally his German qualifications, although he was highly qualified, they weren't recognized in Kenya. So he'd spent most of his evenings training up to do the British qualifications, first as an architect and then as a town planner. Mm-hmm. And then when they left Kenya at independence, because the Kenyan government, they were going to freeze people's accounts, so you couldn't send money abroad.
Wow.
So I was in England as I was studying, and my brother was in South Africa. So they said, we have to be able to send money. So they decided to leave and came to England, hoping to find a job. But my father, because he didn't have any experience of England, he couldn't find a job. And luckily, a friend from Kenya, I don't know quite what he did, but in the end, my father was appointed town planning advisor to Bermuda.
Oh.
So my parents left England and went to Bermuda, and my father was very, very happy. He loved it there, loved his job, loved Bermuda, loved the people. But then after just 1 year, he died.
Oh.
So that was very sad. Well, he died in his sleep, which was lovely for him.
Yeah.
But he was very young.
Oh. Did they ever find out why? Probably not.
Well, he used to, yeah, he smoked a lot, and he had died of hardening of the arteries, just went to sleep one day and didn't wake up the next.
So your mother, so what did she do?
She came to England and set up a home in England. But one thing that I did when I was in the group of dancers that did recreations of court dances, We wanted to do research into Johann Sebastian Bach's music, because I don't know if anybody knows, but he wrote lots of dance tunes like minuets and gavottes, and not waltzes, but minuets, gavottes, saraband. And at the time, people played his music and it was impossible to dance to them. So the person who was in, who ran our group, Wendy Hilton, she wanted to find out, we said, let's do some research into Bach's music to find out if he'd ever learned to dance. And I thought, well, I speak German. I'd love to do that. So I went to Germany and I found a job in a language school, which was the Berlitz School. And the advantage there was that I had 6 months as a training, as a probation time. So I thought, that's perfect. 6 months probation, that'll give me time to find a dance job, a dance teaching job somewhere in Germany, and I can do the research at the same time. So I went to a town called Mainz, which is...
I've been there.
Have you? Which is on the Rhine, near to Frankfurt.
When I did consulting over there, we were consulting in Heidelberg, but we... I forget where we stayed, but Mainz, I think they had an opera there. Isn't that right?
Yes, they do.
Yeah. So wherever, I don't know if it was Mannheim that we stayed the first round there, we would go to Mainz. Okay, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah.
You're in Mainz.
There I was. Yeah, Mainz has got a fantastic, a very, very old cathedral as well, doesn't it? Anyway, so there I was at this language school, and I discovered I absolutely loved teaching English as a foreign language. But there I met a Frenchman, and I fell in love.
Oops.
The Frenchman, yes, oops. So I'm afraid that was the end of research into Bach's, into Johann Sebastian Bach's music.
Oh.
I fell in love with this Frenchman, and we got married, and we moved to Paris, to France.
Now, did you already speak French, or you learned through him?
I didn't speak French. Well, no, I didn't speak French, hardly. I mean, I had done French at school, but I hardly. So I used to, apparently I never had an accent for some reason when I spoke French. I used to practice going to the market and asking for potatoes. So I'd go to the market and I said, I'd like to have a kilo of potatoes, please. And they were good. They would jabber on to me and I didn't understand a word they were saying. But anyway, yeah.
But you ended up learning it, obviously.
I did, yes.
I mean, well, what did you speak to him? What language did you speak to him in?
We spoke in English.
Oh.
English and a bit of everything, I think. I can't remember. English and German.
Wow.
So, yes, so that I, yes. But
so you went to Paris and then?
Went to Paris. But the thing is that my husband, whose name was Joël, we went to Paris because he had a job. He was a translator and he had quite a good job. So he went ahead of me and started this job. And I had to wait in Mainz till my contract finished in September. Then I went to join him. And when I met up with him, the first thing he told me was that he'd quit his job. He'd left it because he didn't like it.
Oh.
So I had just arrived and he didn't have a job and nor did I. And he didn't seem too bothered. But I thought, oh my goodness, crikey, what are we going to do? So I scrambled around and I literally only just arrived in France. I scrambled around and luckily found a family that wanted English lessons. So there I was, newly arrived in Paris, and then I went off. I went off to a family every day to give the family, the husband and wife, English lessons. And it was from there that I looked out for other jobs. But I was the breadwinner.
And did he ever get a job?
Well, In the end, yes, but he wasn't too bothered about it.
Wow.
So it was a very troubled marriage.
But you had kids, right? You ended up having how
He
many?
had three children, yes, and my because my you know I sort of said, well, I said I would marry this man, and he's the father of my children. I can't just walk away and deprive them of their father. But in the end, he walked away.
After how many years?
We'd been together for 11.
So the kids were li little.
They were little, yes. Well, actually, yes, it must have been about 9 years that we were married.
Wow. So was that hard when he left, or were you
It
happy
was
seeing
very
him back?
hard.
Oh.
It was, yes, because of course I wasn't working really with three small children. I spent most of my time at home looking after the children. But the one thing I can say about it is that faced with adversity, I get into action, get into action. I
So what
must
did
say
you
that
do?
I have a very supportive family behind me. What did I do? I thought there was a language school in Paris, a prestigious language school for teaching English as a foreign language, and I got trained, and then they offered me a job, luckily, so that I loved it, absolutely loved my job.
So who watched the kids while you were, or
Oh,
you had family?
all
Yeah.
sorts of, yes. No, I didn't have family. I didn't have anybody. So I had various babysitters and childminders, and actually the kindergarten was Jeremy was just two. And in France, children start kindergarten at three. I don't know what it is in America, but they start
Five.
kindergarten at 3, 5. And so the headmistress accepted it because I explained the situation because my daughter Rachel was there already. And I explained the situation, and she allowed Jeremy to start very early. So he would go to school with his dummy. I don't know what you call it in America.
Pacifier? Yeah, we call it a
Pacifier,
pacifier.
and yeah, pacifier, and his pillow under his arm. And I would dress him ready to go, and then I would go turn my back and do something. And when I came back, he'd undressed himself. So he obviously didn't want to go, but anyway, off we went. So yes, I had various people looking
Oh,
after children.
you obviously made it work, right? I mean, when
Yes.
did you leave Paris for all that?
I left Paris in 1999, so the children were all grown up by then.
So you stayed at that school for all those years?
Not all those years, no, because I left. What did I do? I left to I moved because there were things got sold and moved, taken over. So I always did English, teaching English as a foreign language, but not always in that first school that I was with.
Oh, okay. So then let's see, what time is it? Oh, it's time for halftime. We have
Ooh,
our
goodness me.
halftime show. So then we'll come back and we'll find out when you went back to England and what trouble you got in over there. Wow, this is
What
so interesting.
happens at halftime?
Well, you'll see.
Okay.
You're gonna have to see what happens. No, you can just watch. Don't worry, you don't have to make
Okay.
any
All right
sense.
then.
Okay.
Are you inspired? Are you living a life story you are proud to tell? Are you actively pursuing and creating the life of your dreams? If not, you really need Hillary's AAA program for freedom. Just visit gettingrealwithhillary.com and schedule time with Hillary today.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
Thank you to our sponsors, Kikori. That's a great app. If you're in education, it's just a fun way to bring social emotional learning into your classroom. And it's great for the kids. So that's my daughter's company, just so you know, Suzanne. That was her voice. I always love to say that. Right. And we're back with Suzanne. And let's see. So there you are. You left. So you were teaching English. You were happy. The kids grew. You obviously made it through. And then when did you decided you wanted to move to England and you got involved with Youth at Risk. I'm assuming at some point you started with your transformational programs we know about. That's what we share in common. When was that? When did you do your first one of those?
I did in 1991.
It was the forum then? It was just the forum?
Yes.
Okay. So I did my in 1992, so about the same time.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So was that in England? Were you already in England then, or you were still in Paris?
No, I did it in France. I did the first part of it in England, and then the second part, because they opened a bureau in Paris. So I did the rest in Paris. I did a lot in Paris.
Okay. Wow.
And then my oldest son was studying in England. And as I said before, I had family here and I came, they organized a party for me and I came for the party. And the thought just went zoop, through my mind. I thought, and what if I were to come to England? Because as I said, my children were grown up now. And there was this program called Youth at Risk, which was working with children or young people actually that had been, everybody had given up hope on them. This was in England, and it was a pretext. It was one of the reasons I wanted to come to England. I don't say come back because when I was in England before, I was at school, and it was a boarding school, so it was a rather closed community. So I say I wanted to come to England.
Okay.
So I did, and there was a school called the New Learning Center, which taught children with learning and behavioral difficulties, with a great friend of mine called Noelle Janice Norton, who has developed a fantastic method for calmer, easier, better parenting, calmer, easier, better, all sorts of things with children. And I commuted from Paris to start with every weekend, and I got trained with Noelle. And then I went back to Paris and did my teaching. And one day she said, would you like a job? So I said, yes, that's just what I was waiting for. So that was my opportunity to come to England. And then I started working for Noelle. And I got involved as well with Youth at Risk.
So what kind of kids were those? Were those like...
Teenagers.
Like, were they from rich family, poor family, everything?
Very, very, very disadvantaged young people. Into drugs, they were just the bottom of the rung. Nobody had wanted them. But with Youth at Risk, it was a year-long program, and there were they had one-to-one partners, adults, and volunteer. Well, they were all volunteers. It was just a brilliant program. And they got to see not everybody, not all of them turned their lives around, but a great percentage of them turned their lives around.
So in 1 year, so like you had your own person and your...
My role was to take care of the volunteers.
Okay.
and to be there for the volunteers. I can't remember what the title of my role was, but there were people who were one-to-one, and then there was I was there for to look after the volunteers and to whatever they needed.
Were you a volunteer as well?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
So
after
brilliant.
a year, that was sufficient? What happened to the kids after a year?
Good question. I think they went back to their lives and they either carried on, I think a lot of them. I mean, I think they were there. I think their partners were there for them for much longer than that. But that's a good question, Hilary. I don't actually know what happened to them. But it's still a very, it's changed its name now, but it's still a very successful program.
Yeah, I was wondering if it still existed because I haven't heard it. I
Changed
remember.
its name. It's changed it. I don't know what it's called now.
Yeah,
But
but
I,
it's.
the reason I heard about it was because I have a cousin who worked for them and my daughter-in-law. So my oldest son's wife, she also worked for them.
Oh, okay. Wow. Because back in the day, back in the 90s, I remember hearing about Youth at Risk and the Hunger Project as, I don't know if they were projects that came out of Lynn, you know, like
They
a
did. They did.
self-expression and leadership program project.
No,
I
I
wonder.
think the Youth at Risk might have been, but the Hunger Project was a project of the founder of the whole of Landmark.
Okay.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. Because
Yeah.
I've been reading the Lynn Twist book, The Soul of Money. Have you ever read that?
No.
Oh my God. Yeah. So she talks a lot about the Hunger Project. Now, I haven't read anything about Youth at Risk, which there must be books on that because I'm sure they've done such good in the world, you know?
Yes. I
Yeah.
just looked it up. Yes, Youth at Risk. I
Did you
yes.
find it? No.
Well, I don't know what it's called now.
Well, we could put it when we find out, we could put it in the show notes. We'll put it
Yeah,
in.
okay. Yes,
But
yes.
how did kids hear? Do you know how did the kids, how did they
Yes,
find the kids to get in the program?
I think, well, in the program that I was involved in, there was a particular woman who said, I want this in my community. And
Okay.
then they worked with social services and people with disadvantaged children. And I think that it was a voluntary for the children,
Yeah.
for the young people. They're not, yeah, for the young people, it was voluntary if they wanted to do it.
Right.
Yeah. So it started off with a week of residential up in the country somewhere. And then, yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah,
Wow.
I loved it. And I'm still friends with the people that I was in the program with.
But you wonder, like, you know, if you're a child from disadvantaged background or in trouble, like, and someone offered you that, like, which are the ones that would say yes versus I'm fine, you know, or maybe kids really do want it, you know, like it would be interesting. I don't know. That's what I'm thinking about right now. Which are the ones that said yes and then went on that new path?
But Hillary, because my cousin and my daughter-in-law were very involved, I'll ask them. I'll
Yeah.
ask them what's happened to
Okay.
that. Yeah, I will.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, because it's so good. You know, you hear about, you know, I had a victim story and I had a wonderful family, you know, like a
Yes.
righteous life. And there I was, you know, oh yeah, you know, no one likes me or whatever, you know, my crap. But you wonder, you know, when kids, you know, they don't have a family or they're in foster homes where they're getting beat up or whatever, and they don't have anybody for them. I mean, you have nobody, you're all alone as a little child. Like, I can't imagine that. And so this kind of a program where you now you have someone for you, and I know they have other ones like Big Brothers and stuff like that, but so important, I think.
Well, you know, some of the children, I mean, some of the children were so damaged. You know, one of the young people that in fact, Noelle Janice Norton, the reason we knew of her was because she was involved with Youth at Risk, and she actually adopted one of the young people and took her home with her and nurtured her and looked after her. And this young person, she'd been raped by her father from the age of 5 for how, I don't know how many years, you know. So unbelievable stories, unbelievable stories. Very damaged, very, and some of them were irreparably damaged, and some
Oh.
weren't, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
But Youth at Risk provided respect and unconditional love for these young people. And
Yeah.
some people could handle the love and some people couldn't.
Yeah. Wow. So, okay. So after that, you stayed for 2 years. That's all. And then you went, you were.
I've been in England ever since. Is that
Okay.
your question?
Yeah, I'm looking at the notes. So you set up a program teaching English to immigrants. Have we
Oh,
already covered
yes.
that?
Yes, that, yes. Well,
Yeah.
before I actually came to England permanently, I had been to a try in 2 summers running, I had come to teach English in sort of preparation for coming to England. 2 summers running, I had come to teach English in a lovely school. Language school, actually not far from where I live now. And on the strength of that, I was then asked by this particular school if I would help, if I would be one of the teachers to set up a program in London teaching English to immigrants and at the same time helping them to find work. So there was me and there was a young colleague guy. And so we did, and the program was set up, was run by this amazing woman called Ila Patney, and she set it up. She was the sort of manager of the program. There were two teachers, and there were other people whose job it was to help these people find work. And I was with that program for 10 years, and it was the best job I had in my career. It was absolutely fantastic. And we're still very close friends. All the colleagues that I worked with, we're still very, very good friends.
Why was that? What about that was so great? Like, what did you
Well,
love
it
about
was, I mean, Ela was just such a, well, she is such a beautiful human being and so good at running it and such a just lovely ethos. And all the students enjoyed it. We had English lessons. And we taught them skills for finding a job, going to interviews, and some of them had no English whatsoever, and some were quite good.
And where were they
And
from? What
oh,
countries were
they
they
were,
from?
well, that's a good question to start with. They were from Somalia, but they were from all over Afghanistan, Syria, Iraq,
Wow.
West Africa. You name it. And actually, in that part of London, we still walk around and we say, ah, that person was in our class however many years ago it was.
Oh.
And they're happy in, you know, they've got work, they've got families, they're doing well. Yeah, it was a brilliant, brilliant. I loved it, absolutely loved it. But at once, so I was in there for 10 years and then I moved on to it because I wanted to do teacher training. And then,
What
of
kind of
course,
teacher training?
training teachers to become teachers, language teachers.
Oh, so you did that too. Wow, you've done a lot. It's amazing. And then, so you said the funding ran out and the program was disbanded. Which
Yes.
program?
The what it was
That
called,
one?
Brent into Work or Language to Work.
That was the ILA one?
Ela, yes, that was
Yeah.
that one. Yes, yeah.
All right, and then you retired.
And then
You
I, yes, and then I, well, my youngest son, Jeremy, he was in England and he was his wife or his partner. She had decided, well, she had quite a high power job in France and she didn't want to move to England. And
moved.
Jeremy was happy to be in England. And they had two very, well, they first of all had one baby. And then they had a second baby, and Jeremy had the babies. And so I retired and moved to where he lived so that I could
Okay.
help with the babies. particularly when they started to go to school. So I was very involved with the, with that family when they were little. So I'd be there every morning at 7 o'clock when Jeremy went off to work, and I'd pick them up from school and look after them until Jeremy came home. And so that, yes. And I did
Did
that
the wife ever come back?
He did at weekends.
Oh, wow.
She came at the weekends until COVID struck. And then, of course, she couldn't. Yeah, she was stuck out there. But now they've moved, the whole family has moved back to France. So I was made a redundant granny.
So what did you do? So what? Oh, so now?
That's quite recent, actually. But now, so I'm doing all. I do lots of other things. I'm an advisor for something that's called the Citizens Advice Bureau, where people in difficulty come and ask, you know, if they have problems with all sorts. We advise them. I do a music class. I do handbell ringing.
Oh.
I belong to a theater group. I belong to a group that is a speakers club, so we prepare speeches. We learn to talk in public. And
this is all for fun, not for a job,
yeah,
right?
I do some more. I do still do some teaching, but it's online mostly.
Wow. And that's language. Do you still do the language
French
teaching?
And now I teach French and English. Yeah.
Wow. It's amazing. So what's next for you? I mean, you're just happy doing what you're doing.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Who knows what's next? That's a good question, Hilary. I am going to be writing my life story as my book.
Yes.
Encouraged me to do. So I signed up for this book project, and one of the colleagues that I had when in language to work, he used to say to me, Suzanne, write your story. I said, nah, nah, nah. So when you came along and you encouraged me to sign up for this project, I thought, right, now's the time.
So how much of it have you written? Have you started?
None yet. Because I haven't
found. Oh, you didn't go to the book camp yet?
No, I haven't been yet.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't go to the first one.
Right.
The next two are in Martinique and Guadeloupe, which I'm not going to go to, obviously. So I'm waiting for the next one.
Okay. Wow. Well, your story is fantastic. I mean, do you think, I don't know, would you want to do more research? You can go figure out, you can finally, did you ever finish the Bach?
The Bach?
Yeah.
No, I didn't. Johann Sebastian Bach, whether he could dance.
Yeah, because you had said that people didn't dance to them, but they were.
They couldn't dance because the tempi were too, you just couldn't dance to them because 18th century dancing was very specific. And at the time, it could not possibly have danced to the tempi that they were using, musicians used to play this music. So the idea was to find out if he had known how to dance, then we would have been able to say, look, you have to slow down for that minuet, or you have to speed up for that whatever it was, or that gavotte.
Because a minuet is a dance tune, right, by nature?
It is, yes, a minuet, yes, and a gavotte and a saraband. They're all dancing.
Yeah. Wow. And the minuet, I used to play piano, but isn't that like in three? That's a three.
One, two, three. And there's a gigue as well, a gigue. Da 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 diddle da 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 diddle da da diddle da diddle da da diddle da diddle.
That's like a jig.
That's a jig, yeah.
Wow. And he did those too?
He wrote some gigues as well, yeah.
Wow. Isn't that amazing? Huh. So do you still dance? You don't dance anymore?
No.
Oh. Would you want to? Or is that ship has sailed? No,
no, you're done. I don't want to anymore.
Got it out of your system.
Yes.
Wow. Right. Well, what else? Where would you love to be in 5 years, would you think?
Well, Hillary, let me tell you. As of yesterday, I have been diagnosed with Parkinson's.
Oh.
So this is all new. So I have no idea where I'll be in 5 years. Absolutely none. So this is all new. I mean, I'm fine about it. I'm absolutely fine about it, but who knows where I'll be in 5 years' time? I have no idea.
So how did they diagnose you? Were there symptoms, or they
There
supposed
were symptoms. Yes, I went to see a consultant neurologist. And he said,
Wow.
yes, because I've lost dexterity in my left hand, in my left side. So I just confirmed that, yes, I do have it. Yeah. So that, but that's all. I mean, it's not a,
Yeah.
I'm fine, absolutely fine with it. That's how it is.
And
But
is there
if I,
anything that
when you say, where do I want to be in 5 years? Who
Yeah.
knows? Yeah.
Right. Wow. So what would you say is your proudest moment?
In my life,
Yeah.
I think without a doubt my 3 children, because they're all doing really well. My oldest son, Philippe, he has a doctorate in marine biology. He's a very proficient musician. He has a lovely family.
And where is he?
Pardon?
Where is he? Where is he?
He's in England,
Yeah.
in a town called Brighton on the south coast.
Oh. And then your daughter?
And Rachel, she lives in Israel. She had an interesting life because my ch in France, you don't do any, you don't, they don't teach religion at school whatsoever. And I'm not religious, so I didn't teach my children. I didn't give them a religious education. But my daughter and her then husband decided to convert to Judaism. Well, she's Jewish through me, so she didn't have to convert, but it was the same. She had to just prove that she was Jewish, and then she had to do what they call tshuva, which means coming back. But her husband, who they weren't married at the time, he decided to convert. He was just a regular French guy, and so they moved to Israel, and she lives a Orthodox Jewish life in Israel.
Wow.
So she
And
has
she has
eight.
children? She has 8 children?
Has 8 children.
And she's not with the guy anymore? Or does she have a
No,
new guy?
he turned out to be a bit of a problem.
So
Yeah.
she's alone with 8 children?
No, she's remarried.
Oh, okay.
Two of her oldest children are married themselves.
Okay. Wow. And then Jeremy, the one who was two, who took
And
his
yes,
clothes
and Jeremy is, yes, he's a gorgeous human being, and
off.
he's an electronics engineer and computer engineer, and so yes, he's doing, and they've got 2 sons, and his wife, his partner, she's French, but she's from Mali in West Africa. So I have two beautiful mixed race grandchildren.
Wow. So your Frenchman, even though he left, gave you some beautiful children. So,
Absolutely, yes, which I thank him for
yeah.
every day.
Oh.
They're beautiful, lovely people. So lucky.
Oh, wow. Well, thank
And
you
their
so much.
partner.
Yeah. Yes. So anything in closing? We have a minute left.
Oh wow, well this was I had no idea what to expect. Well it was just lovely being with you as always, Hilary. You're just so lovely to be with. It was easy
Oh,
to talk.
yes. Well, so are you. I always enjoy seeing you. You brighten my day. So thank you, Suzanne Burton. And we'll be signing off. Don't forget to mark March 14th as the launch date for Real Talk, my new book. And
Wait.
there'll be more about that.
Were you going to give my email address if anybody
Oh,
wanted?
yes. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. And if you want to find out more about Suzanne, anything that we've talked about, she's willing to give her email address, which is Suzanne, Suzanne 14, Burton, Burton, Suzanne 14 Burton at gmail.com. And it'll also be in the show notes in case you forget how to spell it. Yes, thank you for reminding me. Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary show. We hope you are entertained and inspired. Please subscribe to Hillary's newsletter. Go to gettingrealwithhillary.com for more freedom techniques and fantastic stories and links to other great stuff. And don't forget to tune in every week on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio TV. And let's get real. Let's get connected. Let's get inspired and create that life you love.